Wednesday the 19th December, Apollo Bateves, Rabbi Doniel Klein, the 10th day of the 10th month.
Good morning. When I went to get my photo taken with David Chesner, so he asked me what day am I speaking. I told him I'm speaking on Apollo Bateves. So he told me that I have to cram in everything I'm going to say into 25 minutes rather than the regular half an hour. So I asked him why that was. He told me because it's a fast day. And it's probably a good opportunity to thank David for everything he does. As the title suggests, the 10th day of the 10th month, Asara Bateves is obviously picked as a very special day. We know that things don't happen by chance. Everything has a significance, a symbolism. So if Asara Bateves is dafka on the 10th day of the 10th month, there's probably something significant in the number 10. In fact, the Chasam Sofer, the Biskarov, they're both medayit from the Pesukim, when the Pesuk says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, the Asara Bateves has to be on this very day, that even were Asara Bateves to fall on a Shabbos, or even as it does sometimes, it falls on a Friday, we have to fast on Shabbos. Asara Bateves is stuck to Asara Bateves. It can never be Nitra. It will never be pushed off. Even were in our calendar, it doesn't fall on a Shabbos, but were it to fall on a Shabbos, we'd have to fast. So there's obviously something very significant in the 10th of Teves, what we commemorate on Asara Bateves has to fall on that day. In fact, for those of you who like trivia, this year's Asara Bateves is more significant than regular year Asara Bateves, because three times in a century, so I'm told, we lain on three consecutive Wednesdays. It only happens three times in a century. And this year, because Hanukkah fell on a Wednesday, the first day Hanukkah, the last day Hanukkah, and since Kislev only had 29 days, so the last day Hanukkah was the third of Teves, so then exactly 7 days later, today, Asara Bateves is the third consecutive Wednesday that you lay. The truth is, and I was told this piece of trivia, I believe it only applies to people in Eretz Yisrael. I believe that in London, if anyone here can figure it out, I believe that in London we lay on three consecutive Wednesdays more often than just those three times. Anyone here? I will spoil it, but when Sukkot falls on Tuesday, I believe that when Sukkot falls on Tuesday, so the second day Sukkot is a Wednesday, then the ninth day Sukkot Simchas Torah is a Wednesday, and Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan is also a Wednesday. Anyway, so this year Asara Bateves is a very significant day, 10th day of the 10th month, and the question is why. So, firstly we're going to try and understand what Asara Bateves is, and then we'll try and understand how it gets its date. So if you look at the first box, there's a timeline at the top we'll get to in a minute. But if you look at the first box, it's from Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara asks, what is Asara Bateves all about? The Gemara has two different Manda Omri say why we fast. The box starts that same Asiri Asiri Bateves, the fast of the 10th month, that the word Asiri over here in the Pesuk means the 10th month. So there's going to be a machlokes as to when actually in the 10th month we fast. The first Manda Omri says, same Asiri Asiri Bateves. It's the 10th of the month. 10th of Teves, Shabbos, Samach Melech Bavel Ad Yerushalayim. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, he laid siege to Yerushalayim, and the reason why we fast is to remember his siege. If you look two lines exactly below that, it says, Eileth Seim Ho Asiri, someone else, a different man, the Omar says, Zechamisha Beteves. It's the fifth of Teves. Sheboi, Bos, Shmuel, Agoda, Shehuksahoye. That the people in Babel, they only found out about the Churban of Tisha B'Av 2 years later, they only found out about the Churban. Took them 5 months from Tisha B'Av to the 5th of Teves. That's when they found out that the Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed. We actually say that in Slichus this morning. We spoke about the 5th of Teves. We gave his pshat. However, we don't keep that lahalocha. Lahalocha, we fast on the 10th of Teves, not the 5th of Teves. It's to commemorate the siege starting. The problem is, if we'd really ask the question, who really cares less that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? You know, 70 years later, they got a new Beis HaMikdash. Admittedly, there are some differences between the first and the second. We'll discuss them, but was it a really big deal that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? We got a second one anyway, 70 years later. And in fact, if we go through a little bit of the history, which is why I've drawn the timeline, we'll see that times were far, far better, it would seem, for Klal Yisrael after the Churban than before the Churban. Before the Churban, everything seemed to be going wrong. There was that Yirmiyahu HaNavi was thrown into jail. He was thrown in a pit. Nobody was listening to Torah. When they went to Bavel, for 1500 years, I was not around, obviously, at Shlomo HaMelech and Chizkiyahu HaMelech's time, but there was probably an unparalleled level of Klal Yisrael. They rose to heights, they learnt Shas, they made Mishnayos, Tanoim, Amoraim. Doniel was saved from the lion's den. So till a year, till 1038, when Rav Haigon was Nifter, every Shaila for 1500 years was sent to Babel, to Persia. What was so bad about the Churban? What did we miss? This Beis HaMikdash, a new one was built. If we look at the timeline, just to get a bit of an idea, my impression is always that people know more about the Churban of Bayis Sheni, about the events leading up to the second Beis HaMikdash, than they know for the first Beis HaMikdash. Probably because Yosefim wrote a book about it, and in the Gemara it discusses the stories of Titus and discusses the stories of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. There is a book written about the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash. It's called Nach, and most people unfortunately don't learn it. So if we just take a few of the dates, the timeline is arranged in terms of the years of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash lasted for 410 years. So it starts with year 391 on the left-hand side. That's 391 years into 410. Now it's 19 years before the Churban. So you see that Nebuchadnezzar became king. And then a year later, he invaded Eretz Yisrael, and he defeated, we'll try not to get confused with the names of the kings, but he defeated Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim was the king at the time. He didn't replace him, he allowed him to carry on as a king. But from 18 years before the Churban, Babel officially ruled over Eretz Yisrael, just they didn't touch the Beis HaMikdash. Eventually, after 7 years, in the 11 years before the Churban, the year 399, so Nebuchadnezzar actually got rid of Jehoiakim, and he appointed in his place his son. And his son was named Yechoniah or Jehoiachin, depending on which Gersi you have. And Nebuchadnezzar's advisors said to him that if you've got rid of Jehoiakim, who was the father, that the Lashon of Chazal is, from a bad dog, you never breed good puppies. In other words, don't keep his son. If you didn't like the father, don't keep the son. So 3 months later, Nebuchadnezzar made what we call Golus Yechoniah. He exiled most of Klal Yisrael. In other words, it's a bit of a... people don't realize that when the Churban came, there were actually very few people living in Eretz Yisrael. Most of the tzaddikim, the Gemara says, Mordechai, Ezra, the Kohen Gadol of the time, they all went 11 years before the Churban. They went to Babel, and they started setting up, like as it says in last week's parsha, Yaakov sent Yehuda to set up yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael in Mitzrayim before they came. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the tzaddikim all left to Babel 11 years before the Churban, and everything would be set up for when the Churban happened. And if we keep reading, so he appointed a new king, Tzidkiyahu. On Asar B'Teves, 9 years later, Nebuchadnezzar laid siege. That's what we fast today, because he surrounded Yerushalayim. It took him a year and a half, and eventually, in the year 410 of the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, he destroyed it. In the meanwhile, Yirmiyahu had been thrown into jail a number of times. He was accused of spying from Nebuchadnezzar's army. He was so telling Klal Yisrael not to bother and to give up that they threw him into a pit. From the pit, he wrote Megillas Eicha. He sent it to the king, who burnt it and threw it in a fire, and Yirmiyahu wrote it again with an extra peret. In Eicha, we have one peret that has very short psukim, like three aleph, three bases, three gimel. That's the peret he added when Jehoiakim, it was Jehoiakim at the time, threw his Eicha into the fire. The kids, the things weren't going so well before the Churban. After the Churban, Doniel comes along. Doniel saved from his lion's den in Babel. Mordechai, Hatzadik, becomes second to the king. Nehemiah, and Ezra Nehemiah, he becomes second to the king, the king's advisor. We'd have to ask, like, Churban, big deal. You know, 70 years later, there's going to be another one anyway. In Babel, they went on to heights they'd never been before. Who cares about the Churban? So, if we look on the third box, is a quote from Yuma, that's Chof Aleph Amid Beis. The Gemara says that Elu Chamisha Dvarim Shehoyu Be'Migdash Rishon Le'Migdash Sheni. There were five differences between the first and second Beis HaMikdash, and the key to what was missing, what was lacking, what we lacked from the first Beis HaMikdash is in this Gemara. The Gemara says, Ve'elu hei, what are they? And nicely, in the thing that I've got, they put a nice little comment in. It says, Oren v'kaperis u'kruvim. There's a machlokes actually, if that's one, two, or three things, but in the print we have from our computer, it has a comma after kruvim. So Oren kaperis u'kruvim, that's one thing. The Oren is missing. Eish, the special fire from Hashem for the Mizbeach is missing, the Shechinah is missing, Ruach HaKodesh, the Nevi'im basically stopped after the first Beis HaMikdash, and Urim V'Tumim. The Kohen Gadol can no more look at his Choshen and expect to get an answer for a question that he asked. Five things that point to one thing. The public display of HaKodesh Baruch Hu was missing. There's no more public, oh wow, there's HaKodesh Baruch Hu in our Beis HaMikdash. The Oren is gone. The Oren represents Hashem. That's why Hashem spoke to Moshe. The Eish, the fire that came down for the Korbanos. Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh. The Urim V'Tumim. These things are gone. The public display of Hashem is gone. What's left? What's left is Teva. What's left, as you see straight away in the Purim story, you know what happened up in the first place after it was gone? Hashem had to save us from Haman. What did he do? He made Teva. In the whole Megillah, there's no reference to Hashem. In the Megillah, it looks everything happened naturally. The public display of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being with us has disappeared. And that was never to be got back. In fact, in the second box you have that the Gemara works out that Ezra didn't go straight back to Eretz Yisrael when he could have. Ezra lived in Bavel. Bavel was so good, the Gemara says, that the Torah in Bavel was greater, the Gemara says, Godol Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah, Megillah Dach Tezayin Vabeis, Godol Talmud Torah Yitzman Binyan Beit HaMikdash. To learn is greater than to build the Beit HaMikdash. So, Shekol Zman Shevarach Ben Ariya Kayim, Lohi Nicha Ezra Va'ala. Ezra had a Rebbe in Bavel, and Ezra would not go up to build the Beit HaMikdash while his Rebbe was alive. It's better to learn Torah. If in Bavel they were learning Torah, that's greater than the Beit HaMikdash. But what we miss, what we mourn over on Asar B'Teves and for the four Tanis of the first Beit HaMikdash, is we mourn over the fact that we lost the public display of Hashem.
Who was that?
His Rebbe was Baruch Ben Arya. Baruch Ben Arya was Yirmiyahu's Talmud Mavok. He was the one who took the Megillah Eichel that Yirmiyahu wrote. I heard a beautiful vort. It's based on another Gemara in Yom HaChof Testament Aleph. I don't know who it's from. That when the Gemara says that Esther said a special capital to Hillim in the Purim story. Esther began the time, from then on there's no more wonderful openness of Hashem, everything is natural. Esther said, L'anatzeach al ayelet hashachar. Now ayelet hashachar refers to dawn. And the Gemara says, that why did Esther speak about dawn? The Gemara says in your fourth box, Omer Rav Asi, Loma nimshla Esther l'shachar, why is Esther comparable to dawn? Lo yimalokha, ma shachar seif kol alayla, just as dawn signifies the end of night. As Esther Soif Kolanism, Esther, the story of Megillas Esther, the story of Purim, that was the end of miracles. Open miracles stop. From now on, everything just as it were happens. Of course, everything's a miracle, but we don't see it openly. So, a wonderful question. If you're going to, what's a nace? A nace is bright. A nace is light. A nace wakes you up. So, if you're going to compare Esther to Soif Kolanism, you compare Esther to twilight. You compare it to the end of day. Why are we comparing Esther to the end to dawn? Dawn is the end of nighttime. If I'm going to talk about Nisim, Nisim is more referred to as daytime rather than nighttime. So I'm going to talk about something being the end of the period of Nisim, I'd refer to twilight. I wouldn't refer to the end of night being dawn. So I heard, again I've forgotten who it was, a wonderful teretz. A nace is a bright spark that comes out of the dark. It's totally the opposite. Everything looks to be okay. Everything looks to be natural. And suddenly you see wham. You see a beautiful, shining light. Something that you never could have imagined. That happens when it's dark. That doesn't happen when it's light. When it's dark, you can have nisim. You can have miracles. When it's light, nowadays, that we don't have the first Beis HaMikdash, everything's light. Everything looks the same. We don't notice the grass growing, the fact that our eyes can see. We don't notice these things are special. Everything is one color. Everything's light. Nothing's going to be a spark. That's what happened after the first Beit HaMikdash. Everything became normal. We would for sure say that they all ask the question, why is it in Chanukah? Chanukah took place during second Beit HaMikdash. Why during Chanukah do we specially commemorate the nace of the oil burning? Why don't we commemorate the battle? The battle was a huge miracle. The fact that they, however, 12, 13 Jewish people defeated the whole Greek army, why do we commemorate the oil burning for 8 days? The answer would seem to be that in a battle we know nowadays, in guerrilla, ask the Americans in Vietnam, a small army, it's unlikely, but in guerrilla warfare you can beat a large army. One atom bomb, one man can destroy 100,000 people. It's highly unlikely, it's miraculous, but it can be that a few can beat the many. In Bayi Sheni they were used to Teva. They knew that things could happen. The fact that something could happen in a natural way and be like, say, you know, wow, this happened for us, that could happen in Bayi Sheni. The chiddush was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made an overt, a public miracle, something that hadn't happened for 200 years. We commemorate that the oil lasted for 8 days because that was something public, that was something that a spark out of the dark that we would never have otherwise seen. The question is, so that's what we're missing, but why did we deserve it? That's the punishment. But why did the punishment fit the crime? What did Bnei Yisrael do wrong in the first Beit HaMikdash that they deserve to get a punishment, that Hashem is going to disappear from public view? He's here. He's natural. He makes grass grow. But he's going to disappear. What was the crime? How did the punishment fit the crime? So everyone knows that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for Simchas Chinuch. The question was, what was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed for? So there happens to be various Gemaras who give different answers. We're going to pick on two. One is a Gemara in Shabbos in Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, and we're going to pick on a pasuk in the end of Divrei HaYomim. The Gemara in Shabbos, which you have in front of you, but I'm going to paraphrase, the Gemara said that there were three Averis that Bnei Yisrael did. One was that the judges took bribes. In other words, Reuven and Shimon came to court, one slipped the judge a fiver, and he won the case. That was the first problem they did. The second thing they did wrong was that their Rabbonim also took bribes. In other words, not necessarily where there were two litigants fighting one another. If somebody wanted to be given a hechsher that he had a good shchita, somebody wanted to have a certain hechsher for averus, all he had to do was bribe his rav, and his rav would say it's fine. And that was the second avera. They used to judge they used to bribe the judges and bribe the rabbonim. The third thing they did wrong, the Gemara says, is that their nevi'im used to practice witchcraft, and a particular type of witchcraft called kesem. Kesem is what Bilam used to do. Kesem means to enchant, to put a spell, to make somebody act in a way that they don't like acting. All these three averas are averas that appear perfectly natural. If you sit in a court and you see a judge give a verdict, then you reckon that if the judge has given the verdict, it's probably because he's thought and he's sat and he's read the book of the laws and he's come up with a particular verdict. You don't realize that somebody has given the judge a fiver and made him change his decision. It's something that is a facade. The way the judge is bribed, it's the outside world, he's given, delivered a perfect verdict, and you haven't realized what happens behind closed doors. And the same thing when you bribe a rov to give you a psak. And the same thing when somebody is cursed by a bilom, somebody is enchanted, put under a spell to act a certain way, to the public eye it looks like he's acting normally. But to those who know, he's actually acted because somebody's put something with him. Hashem said, if your crimes are a facade, that to the outside you appear one way, but really behind closed doors you're doing something else to make this happen, I will give you teva. Teva is the exact punishment. It's a punishment that fits the crime. You don't see the name. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, no more me. You don't see Hashem. He's hidden. But I'll put on a facade for you. It's called teva. It's nature. You won't see it, but that's a punishment that fits the crime. The Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim says that the reason we were punished is because we didn't keep Shemitah. This year, the Shemitah year. But Klal Yisrael didn't keep Shemitah for 70 years, and therefore for 70 years of not keeping Shemitah, Hashem punished them with 70 years in Bavel. Shemitah is exactly the same thing. How does Shemitah work? How can a person keep Shemitah? You have to have Emunah, you have to have Bitochen in Hashem. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you Parnasah. By natural means, you have to sow, you have to plow, you have to reap your harvest, you have to get food. If you don't get your food, how are you possibly going to live? That's called relying on a miracle. Klal Yisrael didn't want to rely on a miracle. They said, we have to plant. If we want to eat food, we have to do it the natural way. We have to plant things. We have to reap our harvest. That's called nature. You want to rely on teva, says Hashem? I'll give you teva. You don't want to rely on my name? I'll give you teva. I'll also hide. I'll make it happen naturally. You think that you have to plant things to get food? I'll make nature happen for you. Here's your nature. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we lost the Orem, we lost Nevuah, we lost any public affinity with Hashem. If we would come to answer our question, or the small Ha'orah, as to why Asara B'Teves is stuck to Asara B'Teves, we're commemorating the first Beis HaMikdash, the lack of the public display of Hashem amongst us. And we'd have to answer, why do we Daska do it on the 10th day of the 10th month? It could be that the number 10 symbolizes all the public displays that Hashem shows us his overt miracles, the public display of Hashem. The Esem Makas in Mitzrayim were a public display of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's might. Everyone saw Hashem. The whole of Mitzrayim, the Chartumei Mitzrayim are going to read, his magicians, they pointed and they said, this must be Hashem's hand. No one else could do such a thing. When it came to Matan Torah, the Aseret HaDibrois, the 10 Dibrois, also, the whole world stood still and heard Hashem speak. It's a public display of Hashem. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the place where the Oren is the focus, the focal point of Hashem. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is 10 Amos wide, by 10 Amos long, and it's 10 Amos high. The Oren is 10 Tfachim high, the Kurim are 10 Tfachim high. The number 10 maybe symbolizes Hashem's public, the fact that Hashem is here. On Yom Kippur, the 10th of Tishri, Gantz Klal Yisrael gathered to the Beis HaMikdash to see, to witness the Kohen Gadol doing his Avodah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fixed that if you want to ignore, if you want to get rid, if you want me to act with Teva and you want me to lose this public display, then I'll give it, I'll lose it, I'll take it away from you. And he Dafka put it on the 10th day of the 10th month. That's what you're going to lose. When we write the name of Hashem, we write it with a Yud and a Yud. The public display of Hashem is a Yud and a Yud, it's a number 10. Mit Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should fulfill his pasuk in Eicha, Hashiveinu, Adinoi, Elecho, V'Noshuvo, Chadish, Yemeinu, Kekedem.